Hey everybody, this is Clint Locklear with Trapping Radio. We have a guest tonight, which is Carl, and we're going to be talking about getting some piggies and some different ways to go about doing that. Get a little bit detailed on some of it, I'm sure. But before we get into the show, I want to thank our sponsors that help bring Trapping Radio to you, and the first one is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. They're also a sponsor of The Rant. And they have about everything that you'd ever want to have. Plus, he's now producing some of the Sleepy Creek stuff, so that's really good. And then F&T Fur Harvesters out of Alpena, Michigan. You can't ask for a better group of guys. They have about everything that you'd want, and then you can get your stuff for them. Hey, Carl.
Hey, man.
And it sounds like you're eating tater chips on the other side.
Oh, okay. No, I'm sitting here chilling.
Okay. And then they have everything you'd ever want. You can reach them at fntpost.com. We have wildlife control supplies. They have really anything you could ever think you'd want, many things that you don't even know you need yet if you're in the ADC business, like Carl is, which we'll be talking to tonight. And then we have Oki Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma. He's a fur buyer and he's a supply dealer. He goes to a lot of shows and just another really good guy. If you're looking for products, think about really going with the sponsors that help bring you the show if you enjoy it. So just keep that in mind next time that you're looking to buy anything. So Carl.
Yes, sir.
Where are you from originally? Because I'm curious, were you grown up around pigs or did you get into this later?
I kind of grew up around it a little bit in South Arkansas. I've been dealing with them for about 25, 30 years or so, better, something like that.
Did you not live in Missouri at some time?
No, sir. No, I was born and raised and grew up in Arkansas and got into deer hunting down there, and we first seen hogs come onto the scene 25, 30 years ago. And that's when I first started dealing with them, and then I moved to Memphis quite a while ago and started an ADC business, and just now starting to see them in this part of the world in the last maybe 10 years or so, Clint.
So you really started seeing hogs about the time you kind of became an adult in Arkansas. You didn't really. It was,
yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
When they started showing up, what was everybody's attitude towards them?
Well, we loved them at first. I mean, you know, back then, of course, we were deer hunting and everything. We thought, oh boy, this is cool. We're going to have a new species to hunt. And you know, for the first two or three years, it was great and fun. And then all of a sudden, we're like, oh my God. I mean, and it just changed everything immediately. And, you know, the next thing you're like, we can't get rid of the daggum things. I mean, there were people, you know, hunting them with hounds and dogs and doing that and box trapping them. And it was a nightmare at that point.
You know, the first experience of mine with a hawk. Before we get into that, though, go and introduce yourself.
Okay. All right. I'm Carl with ACP Wildlife Control out of Memphis, Tennessee, and do a little bit of predator work and hog snaring, and run a ADC business out of Memphis here, basically.
And later this month, you're offering trapping instruction to a couple of guys, you and Chip both. Why don't you tell us kind of what that is and what that entails? Because I can't believe if y'all haven't got offers on that yet, what's wrong with people?
Okay. Well, we've got, I've been doing this job. It's one of my predator jobs that we do for a large club over in the Delta country of Arkansas. I've been doing this job for 14 years, and about 6 to 7 years ago, wild hogs come in on that property. My main two primary goals there would be coyotes and then hogs, and nest predators would be the third. So we've got a very limited time there. I've done some instructions with different fellows over the years there, and Chip has come on board with me the past 2 or 3 years. I think this will be his 3rd year there. And we've got just 2 dates where we take maybe 2 students apiece on this job, and that would be the time limit on. I mean, we're going to keep it down to 2 clients apiece and go from there.
Right, because you're there working. I mean, it's not like a
yeah. This is a 14-day project predator job. We're doing, you know, coyotes, bobcat, hogs, nest predators. We'll do a little bit of beaver stuff and otter stuff, and this will be an actual on the line experience. Somebody's, you know, looking for to learn how to snare hogs or coyotes, trap coyotes, snare coyotes, nest predators, or just even, you know, jumping into ADC stuff and predator control. We're just trying to, we've got 2 spots there. We're just trying to open up and help somebody with on that.
Well, I mean, the thing about this property, which is so cool for instruction, you got big open fields, you got bigger woods, and you got all kind of water and swamp all at the same place.
Yes, it's so diverse. There's so many critters here. It is just, I mean, we got cypress swamps and brakes and sloughs, agricultural fields. I mean, there's so much diversity there. It is really, really a cool, neat place.
Now, when someone shows up, you're going to make them eat ramen and sleep in a road ditch, right?
No, it's not going to be that kind of trapping trip like you and I have been on before. I promise you that. When somebody shows up, you know, it'll be a 2-day course for either Chip or I, and we're going to take care of them. We're going to feed you like kings. We're going to take care of lodging. We have a very nice lodge. You'll actually be there for 3 nights. We have a couple different dates there. You're going to come in for 2 full days. Now, don't be expecting, you know, being taken care of, babysitted, I mean, to the point to where you're just going to ride in truck. I mean, this is a actual working trap line, daylight to dark. We're going to feed you a great big giant breakfast, a big giant meal, but it will, I mean, we're going to be knee-deep in the mud and the blood and the crud, so to speak.
Yeah. If I wouldn't be in there, now we're going to be there. I was, believe it or not, I went and got a new chainsaw the other day, Carl. And when I walked into Ace, the guy that owns Ace here, he has a new guy working there, and he goes, "There's the TV star." And that always embarrasses me really bad because he's watched me on TV. But this is where this gets interesting. He goes, "Well, what are you doing next for TV?" I said, "Well, we're going to Arkansas. I'm going to be doing my thing. And then a friend of mine, Chip and Carl, they're going to be doing live market coyotes and hogs." He goes, "That'll be awesome." I go, "Yeah, it'll be awesome if they can actually do what they need to do while the camera crew's there." I said, you know, because, I mean, if you've never been around a camera crew, what you think's going to happen never does. And hogs, the way them things move around, it's just going to be a shot in the dark. Because you may have hogs the day before Alan shows up, and you may have 5 hogs the next day after he leaves. I mean, have you ever thought about that?
Absolutely. We have, and what I'm going to do there is probably have some places pre-baited. And for the students too, you know, if they want to do coyotes or hogs or whatever the case may be, we're going to kind of set aside something. Plus, we have an additional property right beside this farm that we can go to and get into something fresh if it turns south or we get bad weather, or we, you know, y'all are coming on the latter part of the trip with thick gum. I mean, we might have already caught a bunch of the coyotes, and it might be a little slow, so we've already set aside another section there that we can jump right into and get into fresh animals.
Oh, there's no excuses on this now. I'm just saying it's going to be rough.
Oh, it will be. Look what we went through last year with all the rain. I mean, thick gum, y'all were there for 4 or 5 days, and what, it rained 4 out of 5?
I'm bringing Scooby here this year. I ain't worried about it.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's going to be a challenge, but, you know, that's the whole thing about it. It's going to be real world. It's not going to be, you know, sitting underneath a pole barn somewhere digging in the dirt. I mean, we're going to be rolling and going and daylight to dark. It's going to be fun, and I promise you, it will be an adventure of a lifetime right there.
I can agree with that one.
Yeah.
So getting back to the Hawks, yeah. When did you start? I mean, when they started showing up in Arkansas, did you start just hunting them, or did you actually start trying to trap or snare them, or how did you get involved with the wild hogs?
Well, I first started hunting them when they showed up down in South Arkansas, where my deer camp was. And, of course, being a trapper, I mean, I was trapping at that time and snaring. And then I started playing with the snares at that point. And, you know, of course, in Arkansas, you could legally bait for deer. Of course, everybody down there had deer feeders. And you know, once the hogs come in, I mean, you couldn't even feed deer. The hogs would run the deer off and just dominate the bait site. So, you know, it's like I said, the first year or two, it was fun. And then, you know, we realized what a nuisance they were. And we started trying to eliminate them, and that's when I got into the snaring back then.
Were you doing ADC back then, or was it just more trying to help out landowners and your own club?
My own club, trying to help out and being a trapper. I mean, I just couldn't leave the snaring section alone of it. And, you know, I hadn't been doing professional ADC work but for about 16 years, so... you know, when the hogs first showed up down there, I was just playing with them and trying to learn how to snare them at that point.
So you've been dealing with hogs, Carl, for what, 20, 25 years?
At least that. I mean, yeah, since I was a youngster. I'm 53 years old now, and I've been dealing with them for, oh, goodness, a long, long time.
Wow. So what... Yeah. I'm gonna throw you off on a question, but I'm just curious to what your reaction's gonna be.
Okay.
Tell me the biggest misconceptions that people have when they go to trap or snare hogs.
Well, the biggest thing that I see, and of course, keep in mind, I'm mostly a snareman now. There's some great traps on the market, but the biggest thing that I see, Clint, is when somebody gets online or calls a supply company and they order a hog snare, they get a snare and it's this great big honking thing that's, you know, an 18-inch loop, generally made out of heavy-duty cable, 1/8 inch in diameter, and that's a so-called, quote, hog snare. And if you've ever done, if anybody's ever watched any of the videos on the thermal shooting of the hog, you know, where the guys are doing it with night vision.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you'll quickly realize is that most of the group of hogs that you're dealing with are smaller. I mean, you got a lead sow, excuse me, you got two or three smaller sows, and then you got a whole bunch of piglets. Well, that 18-inch loop hog snare, so, you know, to me, is absolutely worthless in that case. And I mean, as you've seen last year, I mean, most of the hog snares that we set up are my 9-inch beaver loops, you know, my 12-inch cow loops, you know, because that's the hard thing about snaring hogs. It's not like you're dealing with, say, a family group of coyotes in the late winter, which are all generally about the same size. You could be, you know, snaring hogs, and you're dealing with a 2-pound piglet all the way up to a 300 or 400 pound boar. I mean, that's a huge size difference for the hog. So, you know, trying to accommodate that's the biggest misconception that I see on people and the biggest mistake when they start trying to snare hogs.
It's just too big a loops.
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to do a one size fits all with an 18-inch loop, and, you know, most of the hogs that you're going to be dealing with in a sounder group are going to be 10, 20, 30 to 60 pounds, and you just shoot yourself in the foot like that.
Well, you know, are you trying to put me in a bad mood by even saying that phrase on my show?
No.
One size for all. I got to go take a bath now.
I guarantee you, man. That's just, well, you asked me what, you know, the biggest misconception, and that's it right there. And, you know, gang setting, I mean, you know, all these hogs are in big groups, typically. It's not like you're dealing with singles and doubles. I mean, generally, you got a big group of them there, and you got to learn how to gang set them. And then that presents another point. When that group of hog does come through there, okay, who's leading the pack? Are you dealing with a 2-pound piglet? Are you dealing with a 200-pound boar or a 100-pound sow? So you got to set up snare loops accordingly. That's just things that's over the years that we've kind of seen and brought some techniques to light that kind of help us out there.
Are they like deer, where the female, the mom, leads, the young follow, and the boar's way back to see if anybody's going to get killed?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're going to have one dominant lead sow, and then generally two or three other sows, and then the rest of the group is mainly going to be young piglets. And then the boars, excuse me, are mostly solitary, and they're in and out of the group. So, you know, like these companies promoting these big cage traps, which are great systems, by all means, you know, they're promoting 100% capture. But that's not totally true. I mean, yeah, they're going to catch a large group of them, but there's always going to be other piglets or boars that are on the outside of the group that are coming in and out and filtered in and out. And I just don't see 100% capture. Not saying that the snaring methods we've developed is 100%. I don't think there's such an animal as 100% capture. I mean, you've seen that last year where we were using the cage traps and the pins and all that stuff. We were setting the snares directly on the side of them because they didn't caught, you know, 2, 3, 4 pigs. And now the other pigs get spooky of it. And we was using that basically as a bait station, a decoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the most creative way to catch hogs I've ever thought about. When I saw you do that, I mean, it was just like you paid attention to your environment and you adapted to what you saw.
Well, yeah, I mean, the hogs were still coming there, and they would eat the bait around the outside of the trap or the pen or the circle trap or whatever it would be, but they would not enter it. So now we going to use that pin and set snares up on it. Plus, we're going to go back into the woods a little bit to get them trails that are leading up to it. Like I say, I don't think there's a, you know, one thing cures all on it. You just got to beat the first and read your sign, figure out what size hogs are coming in and out of there, and adjust to it properly from there.
I can see that. I had an email the other day, Carl, and I thought about you when I got it. And no, it was a private message on Facebook. And it was a younger guy calling for his granddad, or PMing me for his granddad. And his granddad was having trouble. You know, you've got coon and cats and coyotes and stuff going down, and fox going down certain trails, and he's having a lot of his snares knocked down. And the question was, which I thought was creative, and I'm trying to figure out in my mind how you would do it, but what he wants to do is put like an 8-inch loop and then a 10-inch loop and a 12 or 14-inch loop, but have them as one snare. So like you're like zip tying these things together or something. Have you ever tried that with a hog?
You're talking about one setup for different size animals in one snare?
Yeah, like if you had a trail and you had a tree next to the trail, and that is going to be your support, you put a big loop, and in the middle of that a medium loop, and then, you know, you would drop down on the very bottom of that one and have a smaller loop.
I got you. I've never given that any thought, and that's creative thinking. I commend him for that, but I don't know how well that would work right there. I mean, to me, it would seem better to stretch them out and do a, you know, a 10-inch loop and an 8-inch loop and a 6-inch loop on the same trail, and You know, going back to the hogs, I mean, you're going to get some knockdowns and some pull throughs with hogs because you don't know whether it's a 2-pound piglet or a 200-pound hog. So you're trying to adjust your setup for that. I just think I would kind of set up maybe a little bit of all of it rather than in one set, you know.
I told him to try it and let me know how it worked, because that, to me, that was, it would be, it, I mean, I, it'd be cool to me if it would work, thinking about coyotes and bobcats, if you, you know, you got the perfect place, that it, whatever comes down first, you'd catch it. Of course, you'd ruin one of your snares.
Well, true. And you know, you got to give him me for effort. I mean, that's creative thinking right there. I don't know that the principle behind it is sound, but it would dang sure be worth. I mean, that's how we learn right there, you know. It try is. Something. Yeah. If it doesn't work, we walk away from it and leave it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you describe your snares? Because they're almost, they're close to artwork.
Well, I appreciate that compliment very much. I don't know what I'd call them artwork, but I mean, you know, it's come from a lifetime of building snares and basically the animal teaching me. You know, one of the quotes you said that I caught from you years ago was, if everything's working fine, I don't mess with it. It's not till something shows me an issue that I adjust it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've taken that into my snare building and let the animal show me my weak points in it, because that's how you learn. Again, coming back to this, you know, this guy, what he just said there, you learn by experience. And my snares, I mean, you know, of course you're going to bump up your cable strength a little bit. Swiveling is very important. I've gone to, on the business end, mostly 1x19 because it's less kink and twist resistant, and it's just evolved into taking out all the weak points, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So,
yes, sir.
From, just so everybody knows, like 1x19 is slick, so what are you using for stops, nuts or aluminum ferrules?
I use aluminum ferrules and aluminum stops on all my snare builder now. And I crimp them in a manner. I mean, that's a little bit, you know, you were commenting on my snares when you seen them. You thought I used extra long or some kind of special ferrule. It's not necessarily that. Excuse me. It's the way I crimp them. And during that process, I mean, I'm putting 5 individual crimps on a ferrule, so that's elongating that ferrule to cover more surface area and get a stronger bite on that cable, particularly, like you say, if you're using 1x19, because it is a slicker, smoother cable than 7x7.
Now, are you using, what kind of locks are you using, Carl?
Well, on most of my hog stuff, I've gone to cam locks, and I'm not a big cam lock fan, but what I was finding with these big hogs is that the my slim lock is my favorite lock, bar none, followed by a micro lock, okay? But the problem with them two locks on hogs is they have a sharp edge that actually bites and digs into the cable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fine on a 30-pound cow, but when you put a 300-pound wild hog in it, that sharp cable, I mean, I was having, you know, 1x19, 3/32 cable, and some of this cable that I'm using is rated at like 1,200 pounds, but that lock was actually cutting that cable. All my connections, my swivels, my furls, and everything, I've got that down to a science. That's all holding, but then that lock was actually, now we're just talking the bigger hogs, you know, which is a small fraction of your hog kit, and the cam lock actually takes it out because it's binding that cable, and it's not got that sharp edge, which is actually cutting that cable. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Are you cleating your cam locks, or are you leaving them stock?
I'm cleating them.
You are.
I do cleat them. Cutting grooves in them. Mm-hmm.
And for your swivels, you're using the barrel swivels.
Number 12. They're rated like 1,100 pounds. Never had an issue. There for a while, I was running number nines, which are the same size lengthwise, but they're just a thinner material. And I was having some of the number nines get stretched out by the big hole. So I just now go to number 12s altogether and just totally eliminated that. I've never had an issue with the number 12 swivels.
Now, where would somebody get those? That's not something that's going to be in a normal catalog or Bass Pro, I'm assuming.
No, you're not going to get it there. I think Minnesota sells them, F&T.
Okay.
Snare Shop, Jeremy up there, he'll take care of you.
See, I thought you was having to get those from, like, Memphis Net and Twine or some type of commercial fishing place.
No, you can, but I order most of my stuff from Jeremy up at the Snare Shop. That swivel is no big secret now. I use the smaller in all my tow and bobcat snares and everything, which is a number 6 and a little bit smaller. But it's just an inline barrel swivel, and it works great, and they're tough, and you can reuse them over and over and over again.
Well, have you ever played with just using trap swivels?
I have, yes, sir.
Did you?
But I've had too many of them. Now we're speaking on hogs now. I've had too many of them straighten that J hook out.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And on your ends, are you looping it where you can just loop it around a tree? Or are you having some type of connector?
No, I put a fairly decent sized loop on the terminal end of it, on the very end. That way, I can hook it around a tree or a sapling, or go straight to an extension cable with a drag, or something of that nature is what I do with it.
And
so you got, basically got a pigtail of however many feet on a big hog snare. That'll be 4, 5, 6 foot long. That way I can loop the whole snare back through itself through that loop on a sapling. And if there's no sapling right there close to the trail, I just hook it up to a drag or something of that nature.
Yeah, that makes sense. But you're not having it where it can close down on itself, because that seems like that'd be a nightmare on a big hog.
Absolutely. No, it's a solid double furl loop big enough to accommodate the whole snare back to itself if need be. Otherwise, I'm going with a big quarter inch quick link or something like that and connecting it to an extension cable to run off to a drag or, another sapling or something close by.
Okay. Well, the last thing about your snares, just so someone, if they're going to build their own, they can kind of have an idea. Are you supporting it with tubing, a whammy, or what are you doing?
Tubing, absolutely. Mostly vinyl tubing. And I'm building you some snares right now. You'd asked me to build you a few. And I just now found another tubing that I'm really excited about. Of course, here again, it needs to go through the trial and error stage. But, vinyl tubing is great, particularly when you size it to meet your number 9 support wire. But in cold weather, that stuff is cold and brittle and stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this dead-gum tubing here the other day, a couple weeks ago, on a ADC job doing some roof fret work on a roof by air conditioner. And it's more of a rubberized material. And I noticed, I was trying to build these different snares. Of course, I'm dealing with 16. 564 and 3/32 1/8 inch cable. And this tubing that I've got now, which is rubberized, it will stretch to fit from anything from 16 all the way out to an 1/8 inch. So I'm trying to find another source for it and figure out what it is. But absolutely, tubing is the only way to go for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, when I started with all that, it was nothing but whammies. But then there were so many differences in the number 9 wire, and then people started making all this stuff with 11. It was driving me crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'd wind up back with a piece of electrical tape and just, bypass all that. And it's just frustrating, like you say. But, yeah, I build everything to fit a standardized number 9 wire, And this new tubing here that I found, like I say, I'm going to try to research it and figure out what it is, where I can get it, because it will stretch to, you know, out to bigger sizes. Like you said, there's a big difference in all these wires that you get from different manufacturers out there.
Have you played around with that in the freezer to see if it does get brittle?
No, I have not yet. I just found this tubing the other day, maybe 2 weeks ago. And as you know, I've been sending you some pictures of this mountain or snare stuff I've been working on.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I'm sitting here looking at a mountain right now. And I just found this the other day. I still got my vinyl, which is set up, you know, for number 9 wire and all that, and it works great. But this stuff here, I'm really excited about, and I'm going to put it on your snares that I'm building for you right now.
Okay, so we've got our snare down. Well, why don't you explain your loop sizes and how you're using that in that system that you have? Because that's pretty ingenious.
You talking about for hogs?
Yes.
Strictly, yeah, okay. Well, like I said, that, you know, going back to the main problem and the weakness where I see people starting on hogs is they got one snare size with an 18-inch loop. And so that is totally, totally wrong to me. I mean, if you're going to, you know, snare a 300-pound boar, well, yeah, you want a big loop on it. But most of the hogs in a sounder group are going to be small. And I'm generally trying to catch that lead sound right off the bat. So let's take a particular trail. I'm going to set that trail up with, on the outside, okay, let's say we put 6 snares on that trail. Generally, I'm going to do at, you know, 14 to 16 inch loop on the 2 outside ones, okay? And then I'm going to come down in size because I know, excuse me, that most of the, you know, rest of the group are going to be smaller. And if I can ever snare that big lead sow, all her piglets and the rest of the group are going to hang around, and they're going to be up and down that trail. That's kind of the way I approach it, Clint.
And then somewhere in the middle, though, you're setting it for big boy, for memory, if I remember what you were doing right.
I'm generally going to have at least 1 or 2 great big, you know, 16, 18-inch loops. I'm going to drop down on the, you know, most of my small stuff is going to be in the middle. So I generally want to try to get that big boar, because let's say a big hog comes down the trail and he's too big for your small stuff. I generally want to try to pick him up first on the outside. And then if he comes down, let's say you don't catch him, you know, coming through your series of snares where he's just going to knock everything over. So I'm generally trying to target him on the outside and then smaller stuff on the inside. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Have you ever foot snared bigger hogs and those smaller ones, or tried to foot snare them on purpose?
Only on accident. I've never tried. Yeah. Most of the states that I work in, the foot snares are illegal. So, I mean, I've snared a couple, you know, like a big hog coming down the trail and hit a small snare and it catches him by the foot. That's the only way I've done that.
Well, I don't mean like the mechanical foot snares. I mean like a lot of the old woofers used to, when they didn't have any cover for trails, they would make like a 6-7-inch loop and put it on a sharp angle for coyotes.
I've not played with it. Like I say, I've snared a few on accident, not purposely trying to, but never have targeted that, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to play around with that a little bit in Arkansas then.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
So when you're saying that the foot snare is illegal, you're talking about like the mechanical kinds?
Yes, yeah, the foot snare throwers that launch it, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a shame, because a hog never gets out of one of them things.
That's what I'm talking about. I would love to be able to run them on some of them trails, because now that would eliminate having to worry about all the different loop sizes and different things of that nature. You see, you could just put that in the trail and he's coming down it, a little stepping stick or whatever. I would love to try that, but unfortunately, it's illegal where I trap.
Mm-hmm. You know, and plus, yep. if we could figure out how to foot snare them, it would take at least, it'd turn them into a three-wheel drive instead of a four-wheel drive.
Absolutely, yep. Yep, because that's where you get all that power, is, you know, breaking these cables like I'm talking about. I mean, you take a 200-pound pig, and you put him in a snare with all 4 feet churning, and, you know, my extension cable is generally 9 foot long, and then the snare is going to typically be about 7 foot long. Well, man, that's 16 foot one way. That's 32 foot of running room, and 200 pounds of charging hog, that's where you're going to find out whether your equipment's up to the test or not.
Could you imagine trying to do, like, live market coyote with live market hog on a hog with a 16-foot or 32-foot running area?
I don't think I'd want anything to do with it.
If you do, I want to video it.
No, that would be, hey, y'all, watch this moment right there, I promise you. Because just dealing with them in that situation, a lot of these places, you know, we're up in tight brush, you know. Chip and I got charged, 2 years ago? We were filming, we were concentrating on the camera, trying to get some footage, and this hog was backed up, and, I mean, dude, he covered that 30-foot distance in, like, 2 seconds, and the only thing that saved us, I was talking, narrating, and I seen him coming, and the time I dropped, I had the Benelli shotgun. I mean, it was so fast, you'd be in trouble in a hurry or something like that right there.
I mean, hogs are dangerous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and they're mad. I mean, when you come up there to him and he's in that snare, they are some kind of mad. You got your hands full, I promise you.
Well, the other day, we had a thing going on text, and I'm not sure that I explained what I was thinking, so I want to run this by you because I was going to bring some wire down there. You know, you got all them small trees where the hogs are anyway, so what I was thinking, if I could pick a clump that was of trees, you know, like, say, 3-4 inches, that are all within 2 or 3 feet of each other, run my wire around the outside, so if the hog pushed on the wire, he's pushing into the trees.
Right.
Wire them together, so I'd have a funky-looking shaped round pin, but it wouldn't be round, it'd just be the shape of the trees, but I wouldn't want it more than just a couple of feet, probably 2 or 3 feet at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
The first night, run corn on the outside of the fence and just wait till they hit it. And,
yeah.
And then once they hit it, off of those trees that's holding the pin there, hang the loops and then just pour the corn actually inside the wire where they're going to have a hard time getting to it. So as they circle.
Yeah, we're. Go ahead.
So as they're circling, trying to figure out how to get into the wire, they're going to run into four, five, six snares right around the edge where you'd have the bigger ones,
yeah,
and the small ones and stuff like that.
Yeah, we got to play with that. I think that's an ingenious idea because looking at some of the hog traps over there, you've seen this very well. I'm sure that's where you were thinking about this, because
mm-hmm.
the hogs will wear a trench down around the. I mean, they're going to literally brush against the pin, the hog trap, or the figure C or whatever kind of trap there it is. Now, they might not commit to going into it, but they will absolutely wear a trench down around the outside. So, like you said, if you could design that or do that, and we've been kind of kicking this around a little bit, and I think you're onto something right here. We just need to play with that and see what works and work the bugs out of it. But I think you're absolutely onto something with that.
Well, the biggest thing in my mind, I mean, when I've seen what the hog traps, what they do to them, the circling, I would much rather have like to make a 3 foot circle, you'd need what, 10 feet of wire?
Mm-hmm.
Similar to that. I didn't do very good geometry, but that's a lot easier to carry than fence post and, you know, that big heavy wire and stuff like it. Plus, you could move it really easy.
Quick. You could pick that whole thing up. You give a little thought into it. You could, you know, have it where your stakes are already on it, wired or zip tied or whatever. pull them up and carry it and, you know, put it on another pre-baited location, I think you'd be in business right there. We're going to play with that, man.
Well, I've got a bunch, and since I hadn't used them in like 10 years, it's probably a good time to use them, but I've got a bunch of the handcuff zip ties.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a hog's going to break that just pushing on it, and that would just be really quick.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to try that and see what that does, and I'm sure there'll be a bug or two to work out of it. I don't know how much, you know, pressure he's going to put on the pen. If he can't get to the feed and all that stuff, that'd just be something we have to learn and work out. But I think you're spot on with a great idea there and just needs to be put in the woods and put to work right now.
Well, I have a feeling after you make one catch, pen's gone.
Well, if you're staked in or close, but I'm thinking we could, you know, hook it up to a good quality drag and get him off of there, and okay, that way it might save it. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, to me, that's one of the things about snaring. I have gone to using more and more drags just to get them off of that trail, because even a trail going from a thicket to a feed pile on hogs, if you catch, you know, you set that thing up and you got 6-8 snares on it, you catch 3 or 4 hogs at night, the other hogs are going to skirt that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put them on a drag and they get over 20-30 foot away and get tangled up, you know, now the threat's over there. It's not back on that main trail. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially something small as a hog.
Yeah, they are sharp. They learn quickly. Yeah.
So when you're using your drags, you're probably not wanting to catch a 300 pounder, I would say.
No, I do not. I mean, I use them a lot, and I do catch some biggins in that. But the problem with that, I mean, is generally he's going to take it away. If he gets hung up on a solid tree, he's generally going to break your equipment. You know, my preferred method would be to get him on a sapling and, you know, something that's going to flex and give and all that and help find him and wear him out. But, no, I'm not looking to put them great biggins on a you know, solid equipment on a 300-pounder. Generally, most of the time, I wind up with broke equipment, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I have been wondering about one thing with hogs, and just with your experience, you may know or you may not, I don't know. But, you know, like a lot of times with raccoons, you have the hot coon trail, and that's where the majority of the young and the female coons run. And then normally off of there, you find slider trails, and that's where you catch the bigger coon. Have you seen the same thing with the male, you know?
Absolutely, yes sir. And particularly even the same group of the smaller sows and piglets, once you make a catch or two, you'll start noticing that faint trail 10-15 foot to the side, and you need to adjust very quickly to that. Like you say with coons, you know, the main goal, you learned this a long time ago, I've seen it, like trapping coons at a feeder, you know, a lot of guys are coming there and they'll set one or two traps. That's why we game set these hog trails up. We're trying to wipe out as many hogs as we can that first night. The same principle with the coons. If you catch one or two coons or one or two hogs, you disrupted that whole social group, you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so now we try to wipe out as much as we can the first night, and then from there you need to start hitting them secondary traps.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, I've seen that over and over and over again. Like you said, that hog is an intelligent creature, and they pick up on things like that. I mean, it's the same principle with these cage traps. You know, they come in there, 3 or 4 or 5 of them, whatever, get caught the first night, and that's why they'll still come back to the cage trap every night, but they dang sure ain't going in it after that, you know. So that's where the snaring comes in.
Well, there one of the places I used to trap in Texas years and years ago, they had a hog cage thing that the guy told me they spent like a week and a half building, and it was, I bet this thing was a quarter to a half an acre in size, and they built several doors, and it was right in the middle of the ranch. And he said that first year they cleaned up on hogs. The next year they caught like two, and he said it's been 10 years and we ain't never caught another one.
Yeah, they get educated to it. Absolutely. I see that all the times. I mean, that's, you know, like you've seen last year when we were setting these cage traps up, these figure C or figure 9, whatever you want to call them. I mean, the hogs are still coming there and eat the food on the outside, but they are dang sure not entering that trap ever again.
So, Carl, to someone that finds, I mean, there's something, I don't know if it's romantic, I'm not sure that's the right word, or adrenaline-based maybe is a better word, but when you think about going to snare and trap hogs, you know, it's just a manly thing. So I think people are interested in it, because it is a lot of fun. I mean, because sometimes you'll hear them things a quarter mile away before you get there, and it is exciting.
Yeah.
But as far as...
Go ahead.
As far as someone that's looking to try to make some money on ADC on that, do you have any advice for people of what they're looking for, or how do they talk to the landowners, or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the landowners, I mean, the hogs are fast becoming a major, major problem. I mean, you look at what I went through here just in my predator control work, you know, three-state area, and all of a sudden the hogs are moving. The landowners are going to find them. You just need to be able to produce, you know, some type of control. Like I said earlier, I don't think there's a total elimination. You know, the whole traps, the cellular activated traps, you know, where you're sitting there looking at it on the phone, on a live action camera. All these are great tools. You just need to have a basic understanding of cage traps, snares, you know, dig them. If, you know, your client can afford to shoot them out of a helicopter or whatever the case may be, I would say run with it. But to offer that service to, you know, a client, you know, these cage trap systems are, you know, $6,000 to $8,000. Okay, so as a landowner, he's sitting there looking at that expense, and then, you know, they kind of promote, well, we're going to get 100% capture. Well, no, sir, that's not true. You're going to catch that sounder group. Now you're going to have to come in, and you're going to have to take up all them panels, all them T-posts, all that gate structure, and you've got to go move it to another place. So if a snareman was to come in, he could take advantage of that, and particularly to smaller landowners that might not, you know, be multimillionaires sitting there with bukus of money to spend. He could offer that. I mean, because snaring is so much more cheap than these big systems, if that makes sense to anybody.
Well, I mean, from what I'm hearing you're saying, just from a marketing point of view, you could probably get the same results but charge less, but you make more money because you're not buying the cage.
Yes.
And
you
could use that as doubt with them going with someone else. Well, what are they going to do? What skill set do they have when the hogs quit using the cages? Because we can still catch them when they're not using the cages.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said that any better myself right there. I mean, the cages are great. They're a good system. I'm not knocking it by any manners. You got the money, the time, the resources, and a couple of land managers to tend to that all the time, by all means. But you need to have an understanding of how hogs work and their structure and their sounder groups, their population densities, and you need to be able to capitalize on all that, and that's where their snaring comes into place. I mean, you can stick and move, and for the dollar amount that it costs you to do that, it's so, so much more less expensive than aerial gunning, you know, the big cage systems. Like I say, if you can afford that, run with it. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to try to sell that service to a client, be open-minded with them, be honest with them, and, you know, be willing to talk about, well, okay, what happens in the future after you talk to that big group, you know.
Well, I would say just from talking with a landowner, I would make it very clear that I'm not saying that I'm going to catch every single hog and that they should be cautious of anybody that says that they are, because you'd put a lot of doubt in their mind when the next guy comes in, he goes, oh, yeah, we'll catch every one of them, just write the check.
No, no, that's a red flag right off the bat. You know, be honest with your client, and, you know, if control, if not 100% total eradication, I know that right off the bat, and talk to them. And, you know, you think about the whole family structure. I mean, you're talking a sow's going to give birth at 4 to 6 months old. Okay, she's going to have 6 to 8, and then the higher percentage of them are going to be sows. So, I mean, you do the math on that. All you're doing at this point, particularly on a lot of these properties, because they're so thick, they're so nasty, they're so swampy, you can't get in there with dogs or, you know, helicopters or whatever the case may be. You're just maintaining control is all you're doing at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's a much better structure to try to sell somebody on than eradication.
Control.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because if you don't get them all, which you're not, now that you got an unhappy client, because you promised something you can't do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you take this job here that we're fixing to be on here in the next couple of weeks. I mean, 3 years ago, by the time I got there in late January from November, when the deer hunters started coming in, they had already killed 238 hogs off this property. And then I come in and snared, like, I think 47 after that. I mean, man, that's an unbelievable amount of hogs on a small piece of property like that. You know, it's just, it goes to control at that point, Clint.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
Well, brother, I hope that this helped anybody that's thinking about getting into this. I mean, your system is way more, complex, but for a reason than I've seen anybody else do with hogs. So that's part of the reason I wanted to have you on here, just to share that.
Well, I appreciate it. Like I say, that just comes from years and years of dealing with them and learning and being beat by them, to be honest with you. I mean, they just taught me what works and what don't work. And you have to be open-minded enough to, you know, realize when you get your butt kicked by them to back up and punt and figure out a different way to go about things is all that's come down to.
All righty, man. Any last words of advice before we get out of here?
No. No, man, I just, if anybody's interested, they can contact me. You've got my email address. I will say, I mean, we're not only going to be doing hogs there. Chip is going to be doing most of the coyote work there. If anybody wants to get in contact with him, he is an excellent coyote trapper. I totally trust him. He is taking over most of the coyote project there. They can get in contact with him. If they want to do anything on coyotes, we'll be doing nest predators. And anybody has any questions, they just get in touch with us, and we'll work it out from there. How about that?
Why did you say that? Now, Marla is going to be sitting there watching his head swell as he hears you talk about it.
I had to throw that in there on him because he is taking such a tremendous load off of me. I mean, on coyotes. I love to trap, but coyotes are, for some reason, not one of my favorite things to trap. Chip, he eats, lives, and breathes and sleeps them. And I watched him. I had a student come over last year, and Chip worked with him for a day, and he was so patient and just, put his knowledge there. And, he understands them. Like I said, he just lives coyotes. So if somebody's interested in that, give Chip a call, and he'll hook you up on the couch over there.
Well, it's not that we don't know he is. We just can't tell him that he is. That's the issue.
You're right there. You're right.
All right, brother. Well, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Clint. Talk to you later.
All right.